Okay. So the only thing harder than confessing something that you really don't want people to know is doing it twice, like when you have to do it at 9 and at 11. So you'll see in a moment why I'm a little nervous about starting my sermon on Pippin. And let me give you a little background before I start. Usually when we're approaching the Broadway series, we throw out ideas for themes, and then David and Daniel collect songs, and everybody has a little bit of an input, and we put it together. Well, this year, coming out of the pandemic and all, I said, let's just have fun. Just get the quartet together and ask everybody for their favorite musicals. What musicals do they love? What songs do they want to sing? And you just give them to me, and I'll take them and put them together. And maybe we'll have a theme, and maybe we won't. But just get those favorite musicals. So that's what they did, and they brought them to me. And so now you understand why, when I begin the sermon with, I hate Pippin, it causes a little discomfort for me. But I hate Pippin. Honestly, this musical exhausts me. I start to focus on the story master, the character narrating this play within a play, and I get distracted by her commentary and her movements. I'm unsettled by the fact that seemingly for no reason, the story master or main player, depending on how you want to call it, can change the direction of the story, introduce new characters, take one of the musical numbers for her own. I'm startled each time that the actors break the fourth wall and demand my attention, and Pippin himself exhausts me. He's out to find himself, out for fulfillment or whatever. But I have to start to wonder if I'm not being quite fair to Pippin. If I look at this coming of age story, maybe I'm exhausted by it because I remember how exhausting my own late teens and early 20s were. Could it be that this story is hard for me because I'm not certain that in those days I set out upon the right path? Could I be concerned that I still haven't come of age yet, that I haven't found myself, that I don't even know who I'm looking for, that I'm still looking for fulfillment? And the truth is, I don't think hating Pippin or anyone is probably a good thing for a pastor. So as I worked through this week, I had to come up with something else. And that's when I came up with this scripture story that I took out of its appointed time. Let me go back to that scripture passage for a moment. We often read it, as I said, right after Christmas. And the baby Jesus is either 8 years old or younger than 40 days, depending on what you read. And his devout parents, Mary and Joseph, take him to Jerusalem to be dedicated as the firstborn son. And while they're there, they encounter the last two of the prophets, Anna and Simeon, who rejoice over the child and bless the Holy Family. As I read this scripture, I thought, what do I need to see that I haven't seen here before? What is there in this scripture story for me if I expand my view and look at the whole rather than just focusing on that baby Jesus like I always do? And the first thing I need to do is look beyond that baby Jesus into the Jesus who grew in strength and stature, in wisdom, who struggled through awkward adolescent years, who probably made some bad decisions in his early 20s. Because Jesus was a human being, right? A real person, impacted by his environment, impacted by his parents, impacted by every experience he had. For if he wasn't, then who are we to be? How are we ever to hope to be like him? Because there's so much impacting us. If he was fully human, didn't he doubt his direction sometimes? Isn't that possibly what happened in the garden that evening? God, your will be done, but maybe this cup can be removed from me. And if I'm extending my perspective, then these parents in the story, Mary and Joseph, they might have something to tell me as well. Was Mary's life fulfilled in the moment she gave birth to Jesus? Sometimes I fall into the trap of thinking so. I care very little about her after she accepts her destiny from the angel, makes the journey to Bethlehem, and delivers the baby Jesus. Oh, of course, she shows up every now and then, like at the wedding in Cana, but I've largely relegated her to a bit player role by then. And Joseph, by the time that Jesus is growing in wisdom and stature, I've assigned him to less than a bit player. I'm not even sure he's still alive while Jesus struggles through those adolescent years, much less his 20s and the beginning of his ministry. Scripture suggests that maybe Joseph is not. Is it fair to only let these two, Mary and Joseph, have a small part in the story? Let them be the instruments through whom Jesus was delivered to the world, but not let their lives and life choices impact him? And take that view out just a little bit further, one more time. Anna and Simeon, both far advanced in age. How easy it is for me to think of these two as doing nothing more than waiting for the day and waiting for this chosen one of God to appear. But how naive is that? And ungenerous. How unkind that is to the lives and the work and the purpose of both Anna and Simeon. They had lives beyond the waiting, and long, full lives at that. Surely on many occasions they had to explain who and what they were waiting on. They had to explain themselves, their ministry. Yes, it's a much more generous and relevant story if I look just beyond the baby Jesus. So I have to ask, what if I gave that same consideration to Pippin? Looked beyond the namesake character and considered the whole thing, all the people. What if the reason I have so little patience with this musical is because I think the whole thing is about Pippin, who's kind of annoying? What if other people are important? Now, see, I can do something with that. But let's start with Pippin and his signature song.
Everything has its season, everything has its time. Show me a reason and I'll soon show you a rhyme. Cats fit on the windowsill, children fit in the snow. So why don't I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go? Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly. I've got to be where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky. So many men seem destined to settle for something small, but I won't rest until I know I'll have it all. So don't ask where I'm going, just listen when I'm gone. And far away you'll hear me singing softly to the dawn. Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can soar. I've got to be free. Gotta find my corner of the sky.
What a great song, right? Searching for yourself, finding yourself in this corner of the sky. It's beautiful. Let me talk about the song just a little bit more, though. And let me put some things into context for you. Starting with this. When you go out to find yourself, when you go out searching for fulfillment, start from the inside. Now, it looks at first glance that that's what Pippin's doing. He's going to find his corner of the sky. But what you might not know if you haven't watched the musical is this, that before Pippin sings that song, he makes promises. Among promises, he makes a promise to his professors at the university from which he's just graduated. I promise not to waste my life, he says, on the pursuit of the ordinary. I promise to do something extraordinary. And he promises his father, I'm going to do something extraordinary. Not necessarily because that's who he is and that's what he wants, but because he thinks that's what he is supposed to do as Charlemagne's son. And then that's so inspiring, finding my corner of the sky. But did you listen? Cats fit on the windowsill. Children fit in the snow. Why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go? Gotta find my corner of the sky. And yes, I'm being a little facetious. But what if Pippin is a fish? Cats fit on the windowsill. Children fit in the snow. Not everyone fits in the sky. Not everyone's fulfillment is in the sky. You have to search in yourself and find out who you are. As you search for fulfillment, as you search for yourself, as you come of age, keep in mind who you are, not who others want you to be. One of my favorite authors is Henry Nouwen. One of the reasons I love him so much is because he was so honest. And in his mid-years, Henry Nouwen has what we call colloquially a breakdown. And he had to go away for some extended time on sabbatical to recenter himself, to find himself again. And while he was there, he wrote letters to himself. He journaled extensively. And one of the ones he wrote that I turn to over and over is this entry. He was writing to himself. You have to trust the inner voice that shows the way. You know that inner voice. You turn to it often. But after you have heard clarity what you are asked to do, you start raising questions, fabricating objections, and seeking everyone else's opinion. Jesus gave us a good example for this. He looked within himself to the divine there. Yeah, it might have been easier for him to find the divine self, but it's there in us as well. So the first thing I want to tell you about that journey to self-discovery, to fulfillment, is look within yourself. And the second thing I want to say is don't stop searching for fulfillment and purpose just because you've gotten older. Listen to Pippin's grandmother sing.
When you are as old as I, my dear, and I hope that you never are, you will woefully wonder why, my dear, through your cataracts and catarrh, you could squander away or sequester a drop of a precious year. For when your best days are yet master, the rest are twice as dear. What good is a field on a fine summer night if you sit all alone with the weeds? Or a succulent pear if with each juicy bite you spit out your teeth with the seeds? Before it's too late, stop trying to wait, for fortune and fate you're secure of. For there's one thing to be sure of, mate, there's nothing to be sure of. Oh, it's time to start living, time to take a little from this world we're given, time to take time, cause spring will turn to fall in just no time. If I was afraid when there was a challenge to take, and I've never thought about how much I weighed when there was still one piece of cake. Maybe it's meant the hours I've spent feeling broken and bent and unwell, but there's still no cure, so heaven sent has the chance to raise some hell. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh,
it's time to start living. Time to take a little from the world we're given. Time to take time,
for spring will turn to fall in just no time at all.
Sages tweet that age is sweet. Good deeds and good works earn you laurels. But what could make you feel more obsolete than being noted for your morals? Give me a man who is handsome and strong, someone who's stalwart and steady. Give me a night that's romantic and long, then give me a month to get ready. Now I could waylay some aging away and persuade him to play in some granny. But it's hard to believe you're being led astray by a man who calls you granny. Everybody!
Oh, it's time to start living.
Time to take a little from the world
you're given.
Time to take time, for spring will turn to fall.
Just
no time at all.
Time to keep living, time to keep taking from the world you're given. You are my time, so I'll throw off my shawl.
And watching your flings be flung all over makes me feel young all over in just no time.
When she starts, she's singing, "When you're as old as I, my dear, and I hope that you never are," and then goes through to tell him some of the things she doesn't especially appreciate about growing older. But then, did you hear the song change? When your best days are yester, the rest are twice as dear. Tying this back to our sermon, you know, I think we get caught up, it's back to our scripture, I think we get caught up in this Jesus story, and we think that everyone in it is young. I don't know about you, but I think of the disciples as strapping young men, Mary, Martha, Lazarus. I'm always thinking of them as young people, but really, two sisters living with their brother, I don't think that's probably when they were very young. I think it's very possible that Mary and Martha had been widowed, and now they needed a male to provide some protection and security. That makes a lot more sense, but it's not where my mind automatically goes. You know, one of the things about getting older is this thing you hear all the time. You know, when you're young, you hear all the time, why don't you act your age, right? Why don't you grow up? But then when you get older, people start asking you again, why don't you act your age? Because you're acting too young, too full of yourself and ideas and plans and possibilities. Why don't you act your age and go away quietly somewhere? The people in this congregation are setting a wonderful example for all of us. If you pay attention to their stories and what they're doing, they're learning new things, trying new hobbies, visiting new places, showing us how to keep living. And many of you know this story, but it bears repeating. You know, when we got to a stopping point in building this sanctuary, we'd had two dishonest contractors. We'd had problems with the city of Austin. And we literally thought, this is about to stop dead in its tracks. And to our rescue rode in six people, all over 70, who were retired and had the time and the experience and the energy and the know-how, who pulled their RVs into the parking lot and lived here so that they could keep an eye on things 24 hours a day. Yeah, acting your age means something different. When you're out to find yourself and find fulfillment, don't think it stops when you're in your 20s or even in your 30s or 40s. It never stops. Coming of age is a lifelong journey. And the final thing I want to say about this journey to find yourself, to find fulfillment, is when you look for fulfillment, start where you are, with gratitude and attention for exactly where you are. Reverend M. Barclay is the director of a resource called Enfleshed that we use sometimes in our worship planning. Reverend M. Barclay says that it's the things in my life that are around me now, that are everyday and ordinary, that are teaching me the most about my life. M. Barclay reminds us that Simone Weil claimed that absolutely unmixed attention is prayer. And that if we will put our unmixed attention on something, it becomes a prayer and our whole soul will follow into that space. And also, as Mary Oliver said, that attention is the beginning of devotion. And if you've ever read any of Mary Oliver's poetry, you know that Mary Oliver gives whatever it is that is in her presence, her full attention, a blade of grass, a grasshopper. So we're going to listen to Pippin and Catherine sing a love song. Catherine comes into the story and finds Pippin and helps nurse him to health. And they're going to sing this love song, but it's not the love song so much I want you to pay attention to as the way that this love song sets you in to the that you are. Catherine and Pippin sing Candles and Confidences, trading old beliefs, humming old songs, lowering old defenses, and just being here, singing a love song, full attention, full gratitude for where we are right now.
Sitting on the floor and talking till dawn. Trading old beliefs and humming old songs,
lowering old defenses,
singing a love song, la 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 la, love song, la 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 la, private little jokes and silly pet names,
lathering soap and lotion,
all all of the cliches and all of the games,
all of the strange emotions,
singing a love song, la 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 la, love song, la 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 la. You say the whole is greater than the sum of the parts thereof. Well, if it's true of anything, it's true of love. Cause how can you define a look or a touch?
How can you weigh a feeling?
Taken by themselves, now they don't need much.
Together they send you really
into a love song. La la la. Love song, la 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 la. La 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 la.
Before you begin that journey to find yourself, first make sure that you are comfortable and present where you are with what you have. You know, I've been talking this whole time about finding yourself, and wouldn't you know it, I got to the end of my sermon preparation. I found this amazing quote who says you should never talk about finding yourself. But it's so good that I'm going to negate the whole first 90% of my sermon and just go ahead and share this quote, okay? Emily McDowell, I don't know who that is, but Emily McDowell says, finding yourself is not really how it works. You aren't a $10 bill in last winter's coat pocket. You are also not lost. Your true self is right there, buried under cultural conditioning, other people's opinions, and inaccurate conclusions you drew as a kid that became your beliefs about who you are. Finding yourself is actually returning to yourself, an unlearning, an excavation, a remembering who you were before the world got its hands on you. Have you watched children lately? They run, and they don't care that they're faster than anyone else. They dance like nobody's watching. Well, really, that's not fair to kids. Dance like nobody's watching is what we celebrate adults for. Children invite everybody to watch them dance. That's right. They sing for the sheer joy of it. I hear one singing now. Ben Vereen and Patina Miller did something that's never been done before, and they did it in the context of Pippin. And that's where I want to end today, because it's remarkable. And I've said lots of snarky things about this musical, but it's really quite remarkable, including this. Ben Vereen and Patina Miller won Tony Awards for their portrayals of the leading player in the original Broadway production and in the 2013 revival, respectively. This makes Ben and Patina the first actors ever, and I believe still the only ones, to win Tony Awards for Best Leading Actor and Best Leading Actress in a Musical for the same role. Ben Vereen played it when it originally came out, and Patina played it during the revival. There's something there, too, isn't there? The only role for which the Tony has gone to Best Actress and Actor, because the story master is in charge of the story. And what I want you to remember today is that You are the story master of your own story. You're not simply a character in your life, even if your life is named after you. This is not a dress rehearsal. You can change setting and scenery, turn story into song, bring in a whole new cast of characters, or decide there is no place you'd rather be, nothing you'd rather be doing, and no one that you would rather be doing it with. You gotta be you. It's not selfish. It's not narcissistic. It is what the world needs.
Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I've gotta be me. I've gotta be me. What else can I be but what I am? I want to live, not merely survive. And I won't give up this dream of a life that keeps me alive. I've gotta be me. I've gotta be me. The dream that I see makes me what I am.